Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
Everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome to another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show. My name is Kyle. I hope you're having a fantastic start to your day. I am broadcasting live from Northern California here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash on Monday, October 26th. We're not in our usual slot this week if you are listening on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, but if you are listening over on the Take It Easy podcast network, we are here at our regularly scheduled program here on Saturday. Please download, rate, review, subscribe if you are listening on the podcast feed. If you are listening on Open Talk Radio, check out the podcast feed or vice versa. I appreciate each and every one of you stopping in here. Well, it's a Monday. It is 3 o'clock out here on the West Coast, which means I guess people right now are pre-gaming for a Monday night football game between the Bears and Rams that, if you are listening on Saturday, is going to be totally irrelevant by the time that this episode goes to air. And so as we continue to watch everything going on with the NFL, with the World Series going on, we will continue to do that, which is going to be strange because, obviously, there's a radio audience who is listening Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, and a podcast audience who will be listening over on Saturday. So today is a bit of a broader scope conversation, but we do have the Bears and Rams getting ready to play tonight. It's going to be very funny if the Bears win, because they will be the number one seed in the NFC, which is just funny to think about, the Bears being the number one seed in the NFC, not for any reason than it's the Chicago Bears. We know they aren't any good. In fact, some people had them as one of the worst teams in the NFC to start the season. And so it's just funny to see how that macro has played out for the Bears. I said when the Bears were 4-1 that the Bears would finish with 6 wins on the season. And that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. When I was doing research last week for the episode on the NFC West and solving that puzzle, which you can check out on the podcast feed if you go back down the road a little bit, I realized that the Bears are actually projected to win 10 games this year. And it was at that point that I realized, okay, it's time to just give the Bears some credit, give them some respect here, and realize that they might actually make the playoffs over the Saints. That is a realistic possibility that we have here. It'll especially come true if the Bears do end up beating the Saints when they meet up later on here in the season. I don't remember exactly which week that one is going to happen, but it's next week. When the Saints play the Bears next week, we will know a lot of the answers about how that NFC playoff picture is going to pan out. That's a big game, and the Steelers and Ravens are a big game coming up down the road. So that's your little Monday Night Football fix on the Bears and what the Bears are trying to do, but also teetering the line between radio people and podcast people. So it's interesting to watch all of that play out as I do a conversation here. So where I wanted to start with today's episode is our main story. You know how this usually works. We'll break down a big topic of the day. And the first place I want to start is from Sunday's games, since we are here on Monday. And if you listen to Monday's episode of the Take It Easy podcast, we talked to Canadian Cutler. He broke down all that fun stuff about the games. And I realized after the fact that the one game that we skipped was the Kansas City Chiefs and Broncos game, which, you know, this is the best team. This is the super team of the sport who has rendered the regular season totally useless because the Chiefs are totally overwhelming. They have the best quarterback in the game, the best coach in the game, the best roster in the game. And by the way, they are innovative. So they are like the Warriors of Kevin Durant. They have the best player in the game, the best roster in the game, and they have this innovative ideology of three-point shooting and having the best shooting backcourt in the history of the game. They are literally the Warriors super team right now, and they have rendered the regular season totally useless in the NFL. And so we forgot about that game of all the teams. But the other one that we didn't mention was we mentioned a lot about the Patriots and 49ers game, because the 49ers beat the Patriots the way the 49ers tend to win these kinds of games, is they play suffocating defense. Even when their defense is hurt, it is still their ideology. They run the ball a lot with randos who just go absolutely bonkers. Last year it was Tevin Coleman had 100 yards and 3 touchdowns. Raheem Mostert had 100 yards and 3 touchdowns. Matt Breida had 100 yards and 3 touchdowns in a game last year. And now this year it is Jeffrey Wilson who had 100 yards and 3 touchdowns for the 49ers. The system works no matter which running back you put in there. It's why Jamal Williams had a big day for the Packers yesterday. It's why if Derrick Henry were to go down, the Titans would still look fairly similar to how they play, right? Because they have Derrick Henry, that Derrick Henry is going to lead the league in rushing. And why Aaron Jones, because the Packers have Aaron Jones, why Aaron Jones is going to be one of the best fantasy football options in the league and finish top 5 in total yards of offense. It's just the system that they play in. It's what made Todd Gurley as great as he was when he was with the Rams, was that there was a commitment to the outside running game, because that outside zone scheme that the all come from the same Shanahan coaching tree that the Vikings run, the 49ers run, the Rams run, the Titans run, the Packers run. All of them use that system, and guess who are the top 5 running backs in the NFL right now? They include Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, and Aaron Jones, along with Alvin Kamara. And, you know, pick your 5th guy. It doesn't really matter who it is. You can pick your own 5th guy at the running back position. And so what the 49ers now have is the Jimmy G dilemma, because as Jimmy G usually does in this system, he finished the Patriots game with 20 of 25, which is a 80% completion percentage, 277 yards, 0 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. And we have a lot of these stat lines from Aaron Rodgers last year. There is nothing wrong with what Jimmy G did yesterday. In fact, this is what the 49ers want from Jimmy G, is just a lot of games like what he gave you on Sunday, and let the defense do its work and hold Cam Newton to under 100 passing yards and throw 3 interceptions. Like, that is ultimately the best they can ask for as a franchise that is built entirely on defense and has created a system specifically for that type of offense. Remember back in 2017, and this is going back a little ways, remember when the 49ers did not have a quarterback? I believe Brian Hoyer was the starting quarterback for the 49ers. This was year 1 under Kyle Shanahan. First year of Kyle Shanahan, they had Brian Hoyer as their starting quarterback. This was Kirk Cousins' last season with the Washington racial slurs. And everyone, everywhere was saying, Kirk Cousins, 49ers, collision course. That is what Shanahan wants to do. They want to sign Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins was the offensive coordinator, or Shanahan was the offensive coordinator for Kirk Cousins at the beginning for one season in Washington. And they worked well together and then passed that torch on to Sean McVay after the one season with Kirk Cousins. And so everyone everywhere was saying that was going to happen. And what the 49ers ended up getting was a Kirk Cousins equivalent. They got Jimmy Garoppolo in a trade with the Patriots, and they got him without question below market value. They got Jimmy Garoppolo for a second round pick and signed him to a $26 million a year contract extension. The 49ers got Jimmy Garoppolo well below market value. Belichick did this on purpose in order to put Garoppolo in a good home. The Browns offered a first-round pick. Belichick took a second. Why? Because he wanted to put him with Shanahan instead of put him with Hugh Jackson. So the 49ers do what they've done in the past. They obviously, Jimmy tears his ACL. They get another top pick. Nets and Nick Bosa turn it around, go to the Super Bowl the next year. Boom, we come to the present. They're 4-3. They've got four more games versus the NFC West and a very, very tight race in the NFC because the Rams are really good. The Bears are really good. The Saints are good enough to make the playoffs. The Cardinals are good enough to make the playoffs. Two of those teams are going to be on the outside looking in. Whether it's the Saints and the Niners, whether it's the Cardinals and the Niners, whether it's the Cardinals and the Rams, whether it's the Niners and the Bears, whatever combination it's going to be, two of those teams are going to be on the outside looking in. Why? Because the NFC East has to have a team make the playoffs. And that's going to, like it screwed the Rams last year, it's going to screw two teams this year in the NFC, whether it's the Bears or whether it's the Niners or whether it's the Cardinals or whether it's the Saints. Two teams are going to get screwed out of a playoff spot. And so the 49ers are fighting to not be that team. Has it been a great start to the year? Kind of. As good as you could have asked for given the circumstances around the 49ers. Like, they're beating the teams they're supposed to and they're losing to the teams that they aren't. And that's kind of been the whole dynamic for the 49ers this year, is they beat the crappy teams and they lose to the good teams. That gets you like 9-7, 10-6. And 9-7 is maybe not going to get you in, but 10-6 probably will. So there's this odd dynamic, and I'm not going to break down whether the Niners are going to win 10 games or 9 games. That's not the point. The point is the San Francisco 49ers, going back to 2018, got Jimmy Garoppolo, did that, and what we are seeing now is the 49ers are still there with Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo is not one of these top quarterbacks. He's not even in the tier two of guys. Like, if the elite of the elite quarterbacks are Mahomes, Watson, Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, maybe a healthy Carson Wentz, but I don't know if we're ever going to see that again, and maybe Lamar Jackson. The next tier of guys is like Dak Prescott, Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford, maybe Kirk Cousins. Like, there's not a whole lot there. Then you get to the next group of guys, which is maybe Kirk Cousins, your Jimmy G's, your Jared Goff's of the world, your Baker Mayfield's of the world. Josh Allen is also in that second tier. I just remembered now. Apologies to him. Tannehill is also in that second tier of guys now, looking at how good that team actually plays with Tannehill. And Tannehill is certainly an upgrade over Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, the 49ers are now here, and they're looking around like, you know, can we do better than Garoppolo? If our defense is going to go down and we're not going to be the same roster we have as before, we're probably going to need a better quarterback. Because the beauty of what they did last year was they didn't need the quarterback. The Jaguars didn't need a quarterback the year Blake Bortles took them to the AFC Championship game. The 49ers didn't need a quarterback. The Jaguars made the mistake of thinking that Blake Bortles was a sustainable quarterback. I think the 49ers are looking around and saying Jimmy G may not be a sustainable guy. And as he ages towards his 30s, you're going to start to see what happened with Andy Dalton, where he becomes an enigma in the locker room. You're going to see what happens with Ryan Tannehill, where he becomes an enigma with the Miami Dolphins, or Mariota with the Titans, or Jameis with the Bucks. With time, going to become an enigma. And we're seeing it with Kirk Cousins already, who, again, Kirk Cousins, when he signed with the Vikings, was the same age and the same year as Jimmy Garoppolo. So what you're seeing right now is Garoppolo is following the same pattern that Kirk Cousins is following. And the Vikings are falling off a cliff at this point. They had a bye week, and if they're going for a top pick, it was the worst bye week they could possibly have because everybody tied with them took an L this weekend. And so Minnesota is falling apart because they don't have a defense. They have an offense that is built around Kirk Cousins, and that can only take you so far when you're asking him to be. If he's the level of Matthew Stafford, that can get you 6 or 7 wins. When he's the level of Kirk Cousins, and that's what you're looking at, like, things are falling apart and fast for Minnesota. They have the weapons on offense. They got nothing on defense. They got nothing on the offensive line. And the 49ers, while they still have a good defense, I believe their defense is ranked 15th in the league this year. It might have gone up after this Patriots game, so I need to see what the new standings say. They've been largely carried by this offensive scheme of Shanahan through the last few games, whether it be the victory versus the Rams, whether it be the victory versus the Patriots, or whether it be some of their losses versus the teams that they've been faced off against, like losing to the Eagles on Sunday Night Football, like getting their ass kicked by the Dolphins at home and, you know, giving up 43 points. Like, this is the cycle that the 49ers are in right now, where they've largely won because of their offense, and they've lost because their defense couldn't hold anything. And that's the problem the 49ers are facing, which is the Jimmy G dilemma. Because if this thing is going to become offensive system needs to carry the team, to win a Super Bowl, they're looking around like, we need a better quarterback if we're going to be built on offense. And look, the pivot from an offensive-minded team to a defensive-minded team, or vice versa, is almost impossible under one regime. We're seeing what happened with the Bills, where they look perfectly mediocre. We're seeing what happens with the Bears, where we all expected the Bears to be crap this year. But now we're looking around like, oh, okay, the Bears are a respectable team. Are they going to make it out of the wild card? No. Are they going to make the wild card? I can't say for sure. I think they have like a 60% chance, and that goes way down if they lose these next two games to the Rams and the Saints. But they are at the very least a respectable team, where their defense finally turned a corner again, and they have a pretty good defense that has helped them win games. And their offense is the very least respectable with Nick Foles. Why? Because they can give Nick Foles protection. This is the other thing I've been saying. If you put Nick Foles with Tom Brady and gave Nick Foles that offensive line, Nick Foles is going to look something similar to Tom Brady. How do we know? Because we've seen him do it in the past, and we've seen him do it to start the season. If you give Nick Foles that offensive line, Nick Foles is going to look something similar to Tom Brady. And so that's what gives you the respectability of the Bucs and the Bears, who might actually square off in a playoff game, which would be interesting in and of itself, but I digress. The 49ers are going to get guys back. Richard Sherman is injured this year. Nick Bosa is hurt. Rick Armstead has gone in and out of the lineup. Fred Warner is hurt this year. They have just had some unlucky injuries that, although Quan Alexander got hurt last year for them, they were able to recover from it, and they didn't have the depth of last year's team this year. And so the 49ers are looking around at Jimmy Garoppolo and saying, if this thing is going to be built on offense, we're going to need something a little bit more than what we're getting right now. And this is fascinating because they're looking at the landscape of quarterbacks in the NFL, et cetera, and what do we do this offseason? A guy better than Jimmy Garoppolo, they're content to keep rolling with him. And the context that is required for that conversation is this. The 49ers have paid their entire contract out to Jimmy Garoppolo already. Guaranteed money, he is good to go. They don't have to give out any more guaranteed money. So they can cut him with no cap hit at the end of this season. They can trade him with no cap hit to the 49ers. They have paid all the guaranteed money to Garoppolo up front. They anticipated this happening because, remember, when they gave Garoppolo that big contract, whatever it was, March of 2018, they weren't sold on what Garoppolo was going to become. He had started 6 games for them, and he was 6-0, but they still didn't know what it was they had. They just paid him what the market said a starting quarterback is worth. Like, Derek Carr got paid the same amount as him, and then Matt Ryan, and then Cam Newton, and then Ben Roethlisberger, and then Aaron Rodgers, and then Russell Wilson, yada, yada. It keeps going and going and going. So at one point, Jimmy Garoppolo was the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. I think it was for like 5 weeks, and then Kirk Cousins broke that record, but he was still the highest paid guy in the NFL. And so now the 49ers paid that money up front, had the foresight to recognize we may want to upgrade the quarterback position down the road, or if this guy doesn't turn into a great quarterback, we can get out from under this. And so they're looking around and saying, can we get someone better than Garoppolo? Do we need someone better than Garoppolo? Because as we saw last year, they didn't need someone better than Jimmy Garoppolo. They got within 6 minutes of the Super Bowl, of winning the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo. With that system, Shanahan outside run system, like I said at the beginning of this, now four, almost five running backs have had 100-yard games and three touchdowns in the last, what is it, the last 20 games? In 20 games, four different running backs have had 100-plus yard and three touchdown games for the 49ers. And it's not like they're great running backs. It's Tevin Coleman, it's Jeff Wilson, it's Matt Breida, and it's Raheem Mostert. Like, three of those guys were undrafted for the most part, and the fifth one is Jerick McKinnon. So I don't think any of those guys were, like, top picks except for maybe Tevin Coleman, who I think was a second or third round pick. And so the 49ers are probably going through, do we need a quarterback better than Garoppolo? Because unless our defense is going to be at the level that they were in 2019, I think we're going to need a better quarterback in order to get back to the Super Bowl. And they're assessing, can you get a quarterback better than Jimmy Garoppolo on the open market this year? And the answer to that is maybe. And that's why it's a Jimmy G dilemma. If the answer was yes, it'd be like what we're seeing with Sam Darnold right now, where we all agree Darnold is out in New York. Not because Darnold is any worse than Jimmy Garoppolo. He might actually be more talented than Jimmy Garoppolo. It's why he's one of the names I list on here as a potential landing spot for him. It's certainly the 49ers, but they will also hang on to Jimmy Garoppolo. Why the Jimmy Garoppolo thing is a dilemma is because the 49ers don't know whether they can get a guy better than Jimmy Garoppolo. Because there are only a few options available of practical ways to get a guy better than Jimmy Garoppolo. One of those is hope that the Atlanta Falcons keep losing football games. That is one of the ways that happens, because if the Falcons lose enough games to get either Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence, they are going to trade Matt Ryan. And because of the respect that that franchise has for Matt Ryan, they are going to trade him to somewhere that Matt Ryan wants to go to. In the case of Jimmy Garoppolo being moved on from, they can do that easy. They'll take the money that they would have given Jimmy Garoppolo, it's about $24 million, and just give it to Matt Ryan. Via a trade, you have to give up assets, but for an upgrade at quarterback, considering what the rest of the roster looks like, giving up assets to do that makes a lot of sense, considering that they just got two first-round picks last year in Javon Kinlaw and Brandon Ayuk, and the rest of the roster looking the way it is. It makes sense to give up assets to get Matt Ryan. If Matt Ryan decides he wants to go there and reunite with Shanahan, power to him. Matt Stafford is another case. I think less likely to end up in San Francisco, but still a viable option because the Lions can cut him and save themselves the last 2 years and $64 million of his contract while just taking a one-year $20 million dead cap hit and redoing a rebuild, et cetera, et cetera. The other options are, one is just a pipe dream, which is an Aaron Rodgers trade, which even if Aaron Rodgers were to be traded, they ain't going to trade him to the San Francisco 49ers because they don't want to see Aaron Rodgers again. So they will probably only trade him to the AFC. So that's a pipe dream. The other one is Darnold. And is Darnold an upgrade over Jimmy Garoppolo? I'd say yes. Darnold is cheaper than Jimmy Garoppolo, and you can just bring him in as a backup to Jimmy Garoppolo and then have him replace Garoppolo as the season goes on. That one makes all the sense in the world. if you want to hang on to Garoppolo, because we know what Garoppolo is capable of. He's capable of 20 for 25, 277 yards, no touchdowns and two picks. Maybe you can flip those touchdowns and picks around and it'll look better like he did against the Vikings in the playoffs last year. But for the most part, you're going to get that. Bringing Sam Darnold in makes all the sense in the world for them. And if they can make that happen via trade, that's an easy one because you can get Darnold for like a second-round pick right now. So now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm talking myself into Sam Darnold going to the 49ers, making all the sense in the world. But I'm also talking myself into, if Matt Ryan becomes available, they'll just dump Jimmy Garoppolo and get Matt Ryan. That's the dilemma the 49ers are at right now, is they're not as sold as the Jets are on, we're moving on from Darnold because there's a better option than Darnold available. And his name is Trevor Lawrence. And they are going to get Trevor Lawrence, barring something weird happening where they might actually win a game, which yesterday was probably that day for them, and they had 4 yards of offense in the second half. So maybe yesterday was that day where you win that one weird game or those two weird games because it's football, but they did let that one slip away from them, no question about it. And so the Jets are in this position where they know they have a better option than what they have coming. The 49ers maybe have an option better than what they have coming their way. And because of that, it's why they are now in the Jimmy G dilemma instead of the Jimmy G situation, as the Jets have the Sam Darnold situation, which, you know, they can recoup assets for him no matter what. If the 49ers want to move on from Jimmy G, they're just going to straight cut him and let him go into free agency because they can get Matt Ryan or because they can get Aaron Rodgers, which I don't think they can get Aaron Rodgers. I'm just saying it's out there, the possibility. The other one is Derek Carr, but Derek Carr I don't think is an upgrade over Jimmy Garoppolo. Maybe a slight upgrade, but I don't think Derek Carr is much of an upgrade over Jimmy Garoppolo. Both are capable of the 350-yard, four-touchdown games, and you really want to just disguise quarterbacks. So Derek Carr is there, but I just don't think he's a significant upgrade versus Garoppolo, and what you would have to pay for him isn't a practical idea for the 49ers. But it's a Jimmy G dilemma because the 49ers don't know whether they can get a quarterback better than Jimmy Garoppolo this offseason. But if they do, they are in a great position to move off of Garoppolo, or at the very least, transition from Garoppolo to Sam Darnold if they can make that one happen. So I didn't watch very much college football this weekend. I haven't been watching much college football. I was getting excited for the baseball, and we'll get to that in a little bit as well. But I was watching the Clemson and Syracuse game just because I saw that it was a 3-score game, and it ended up being a 27-point Clemson win. But I saw it was a 3-point game, and I realized and remembered that I was a junior in high school at a football game for my high school football team. I was a junior in high school the last time Clemson lost a regular season football game. I am now a second year in college, and I vividly remember where I was the last time Clemson lost a regular season football game. And much like what we're seeing with the Chiefs in the NFL, like, Clemson has just rendered the whole thing useless. Like, they are just so dominant. They are 20-plus point favorites in every game. They is fun to watch the process in between. Like, the Indiana-Penn State game, I saw a video of that and how, like, basically it's like nicking the pylon to knock it down, but also the ball might have hit the ground. Indiana beats Penn State, and Rutgers wins their first conference game in as equal time as Clemson and Syracuse. So, fun fact on that, Rutgers had not won a Big Ten game since that same weekend that Clemson beat Syracuse. Or, I'm sorry, Syracuse beat Clemson. Like, that's just funny in and of itself that I was also there when Rutgers last won a Big Ten game. They finally won this weekend. And Arkansas might actually be good, which makes no sense in the world. And Felipe Franks is their quarterback, which is, you know, funky in and of itself. But Clemson has just rendered everything useless, and they are just so good at football. And, of course, Trevor Lawrence is Trevor Lawrence, and it's the reason that he keeps getting all this hype is because he's this crazy prospect. But this is how Clemson rolls now, is that now they built a champion that could take down Bama with the 3- and 4-star recruits. Now they're getting the 5-star recruits, and they look so overwhelming in both this season and college football as a whole. They just look totally overwhelming, and Bama is trying to reset everything there because he had the Tua injury and the whole team fell apart last year. They're trying to reset with new prospects, and in 2 years, they'll be right back to the dominant cats they were. But for right now, like, this is Clemson with all the 5-star recruits now. It's been 4 years since Deshaun Watson won that championship. So they've been champions for a whole recruiting class now. Their entire roster now is guys that were recruited post first championship. They've got all the 5-star guys now, and you're seeing just how freaking dominant Clemson actually is, because they can get all the best players now. They beat Bama with some 5-stars and mostly 4- and 3-stars. Now they are getting all the 5-star recruits and all of the best 4-star recruits, 4.5-star recruits, etc. And you're seeing it now. It's a whole roster full of these guys, and Clemson is just steamrolling everybody. And I mean everybody in their path, even Syracuse, which got me into the game on Saturday just because they cut it to 6 in the third quarter. They covered the spread in that game, but it got me interested because it was 6 points in the third quarter of a Clemson game. Like, they are so dominant at this point, and maybe they'll have one of those scares like NC State last year, who was a 2-point conversion away from beating Clemson. I'm sorry, just UNC, period. Maybe that'll happen, or maybe that was that one game, because I don't think Clemson is going to lose to anybody. I'm just talking about Alabama and Georgia, and I guess Oklahoma State is now number 6, which tells you all you need to know about this college football season. Ohio State, another one. Clemson is not losing to anyone for the next however many months all the way through the national championship. They are just totally overwhelming. And now you can watch your Big Ten football, and you can watch the Pac-12, and you can watch fun SEC games like Bama beating the crap out of Tennessee, but you're still going to have, like with the NBA and the NFL with super teams, you know what the end game is. It's about the process to get there. And like I talked about before, everything is very hot right now with the sport, and so I'm just going to take a back seat at this point and watch the college football train ride and find out on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday that, oh, Florida State beat UNC last week, but also they just lost by 32 to Louisville on the week after they go and beat number 5 in the country. They lose to a team that is totally unranked and has no defense, just no defense. And it didn't matter because Florida State just physically can't put points up on them because they just aren't any good. They're better than Boston College and Wake Forest, which is, you know, a bar that Florida State was behind before, so at least that's something for them. They're better than those crappy teams, but at the very least now, they're moving closer and closer and closer to middle of the pack in the they're now middle of the pack. And I guess if you're saying they're going to get back to the top, good luck with that, because now you're chasing down Notre Dame. You're chasing down Miami. You're chasing down Louisville, apparently. And I didn't even think Louisville was that good, but you're chasing them down now. And you're chasing down North Carolina. You're chasing down maybe NC State. You're chasing down Virginia Tech. And then you probably get to Florida State. And this is just because Syracuse is having a bad year, too. Like, I'm interested to see, does Florida State play Syracuse this year? Because I'm just interested to see how all that goes for the Florida State Seminoles as they get going. By the way, Ohio State, whew. I mean, it was a tough start, but they just came out crushing after that. So Florida State's got, what do they got here? They got, well, they're going to lose to Clemson. They're going to play Duke. That's a test for them. Duke might actually be a test. NC State. They got some easy ones on here. Does Florida State play Syracuse? No, they don't play Syracuse this year. But, you know, that's going to be interesting to watch all of that play out with everything that's going on there. You know, ACC football talk, always the best talk. I haven't really checked the SEC standings, so I guess I'll just react live because I don't really feel the need to talk about whatever's going on. But they also played however many games they've played now. Oh, it's just all one this time. Wow, Arkansas is actually pretty good. Arkansas is 2-2, and Mississippi State. I did a whole air raid Bible with Mississippi State, and now all of a sudden Mississippi State isn't actually any good. It's exactly what you expect to see. It's Alabama, it's Auburn, it's LSU, it's Texas A&M, and it's Arkansas. And then all of a sudden you just got all these teams in all these different places where, boom, the SEC East comes into play now. Florida's pretty good. Georgia's obviously good. Mizzou, Tennessee, Kentucky, and then South Carolina and Vanderbilt. Is Muschamp still the coach at South Carolina? Interesting. But, yeah, Mississippi State fell apart after beating LSU, and they're all going to beat each other up a little bit. So it's weird to watch all that play out. Good job, Arkansas. Who did they beat this week? They beat Ole Miss. Good job, Arkansas. Way to turn things around. They held the air raid to 14 points, and they beat Mississippi. Good job, Arkansas. Congrats on turning – well, they also beat Auburn, but they – you know, they lost that one on a weird last-second play that you should probably Google because it's kind of funny to watch. But good job, Arkansas. You have really turned a corner here. I am proud of you. Good job, Arkansas. All right, let's go over to baseball. So if you're listening to this on the podcast, thank you, first of all, for tuning in on a Saturday. But secondly, if the Dodgers don't win the World Series on Tuesday or Wednesday and the Rays win in seven, this is going to be pretty much irrelevant, everything that I am about to say in whatever context I'm about to say them. So the Dodgers are getting ready to be crowned champions. And it's been a long road for them. In fact, the Dodgers are the strangest of the baseball dynasties in the fact that they have had so much improbability. It is so strange that the Dodgers have not won a World Series in this run of Dodgers baseball. In fact, it is like totally unprecedented that the Dodgers have not won a championship in this period of Dodgers baseball. They have had 8 consecutive division titles. They have had the number one seed multiple times. They've played in multiple World Series. This is their third trip to the World Series with this iteration alone. They have, again, the 8 straight division titles led to 5 CS appearances, 3 World Series appearances, a Game 7 in the World Series, and now, for the first time, the Dodgers are getting ready to be crowned champions with a roster that is totally overwhelming. They are totally overwhelming versus the Rays. Kershaw pitched amazing. The bullpen basically did not allow a hit after Kershaw came out of the game. So at least now we get to remember this magical Kershaw moment as he avenges the demons that weren't actually demons, but he did have a couple of bad starts. And so he finally gets that championship for what is can only be described as the pitcher of his generation. And Corey Seager and Cody Bellinger and, well, I guess the original guys like Justin Turner and Chris Taylor and all them, the guys who were there for 2017 and 2018 losses – are finally getting to finish what they, quote-unquote, started, the core of the team, the core 5 guys of that team, which is Cody Bellinger, Justin Turner, Corey Seager, Chris Taylor, and Kike Hernandez. At least in the batting lineup, those are the core guys from those runs. You can throw Max Muncy in there too, but Max Muncy, I don't think he was there for 2017. So Max Muncy is a later addition, but he has gone through the trials and tribulations a little bit with them. But those 5 guys are the core players who have been there for all of this run, really going back to like 2014 when we talk about everyone but Cody Bellinger, who is a rookie in 2017, but also almost won the MVP that rookie year and made that World Series run where he didn't play very well. So those core guys are going to get that championship. And Kershaw is another one of those pitchers. Obviously, the pitching staff has been more volatile over the years, where Kershaw is the only guy that's been there for all three of those World Series runs. But what's so fascinating about the Dodgers is that this was the team. It was the addition of Mookie Betts. It was resetting, but never having to retool, because they are so sustainable. They are the Rays with money. They make frugal decisions when you don't have to. This is smart when building an organization, and not smart when we talk about paying players and building out rosters, et cetera, et cetera. This is what Moneyball has taught us, is that from a front office standpoint, value is everything, and it's better to not make the mistake of paying a guy than to pay a guy and have him be phenomenal and win a championship like Mookie Betts is doing for you. It is better to not make those mistakes in the spirit of sustainability and being able to do it again and again and again for as long as is possible, which those barriers are being tested now as the Spurs go to the playoffs for 22 straight years and the Patriots have 19 playoff runs in 20 years. And these barriers of what sustainability looks like are now being tested through generations, through different players. Organizational sustainability is becoming this new trend. The Astros are that trend in baseball, and the Dodgers are becoming that trend of, they might catch the Atlanta Braves for 13 consecutive NL West titles. I'm a Padres fan. I think our team is really good. I also think the Dodgers are getting so much better from this year. They're not going to be as overwhelming as this year, but the Dodgers are getting ready to be this team that is not just falling away like the Nationals did, where the Nationals' run last year was like, this is the last gasp of what they were before. The Nationals had one of the oldest rosters in baseball. The Dodgers have one of the youngest rosters in baseball, non-tanking category. They were like one of the youngest rosters among playoff teams. The Dodgers are built around two new superstars. They had different superstars before. They have two new ones. They have Cody Bellinger and they have Mookie Betts. And those two will be there for a long time with the Dodgers. For good, for better or for worse, they're going to be there for a long time, and they both have won MVPs. So they just added two MVPs to division winners. And because of that, the Dodgers were overwhelming in the regular season this year. There was a time in early September where the Dodgers run differential was plus 102. The Twins were second with plus 51. That means the Twins were close to 500, a zero run differential, as they were to the best team in the sport. Like, that is how overwhelming the Dodgers were. First and second place in run differential was the same difference as second place and 500, just zero, just the middle of the pack, 16th. Second to 16th was equal to first and second. And second to 16th was a big gap, seeing how bad the Brewers looked in the playoffs this year. Second to 16th was a big time gap. And so the Dodgers are now in this position where they ran through the playoffs. Yes, they had a hiccup versus the Braves, but with the Braves, it was like, they won game five handily. They survived game six. And by the time game seven rolled around, the Braves knew it was inevitable. Like, they knew they were just a better team and it was inevitable that it was going to fall apart. And baseball is random like that. That was the randomness of the sport rearing its beautiful, ugly head. But it is a beautiful thing, because baseball's playoffs being random are fantastic. It's what makes baseball playoffs amazing and why I love October baseball so much, even as I grow older and grow out of some of the same loves I had of childhood. Like, I still find playoff baseball so, like, magical, and the poetry around it and all that jazz, I still find it to be fun. Why? Because the regular season is irrelevant. For 1 month of the year, baseball gets my full undivided attention. This year, because it was a short season, they got all my attention for a while, and because the Padres were good. It's why baseball needs to permanently implement a split season where you have two 81-game seasons where you get playoff positioning. I may talk about that later, but let's get back to the Dodgers for a minute. The Dodgers were so overwhelming and baseball was rearing its ugly head. But by the time they came back on the Braves and won that series, it felt inevitable that the Dodgers were going to win. Why? Because the Dodgers are way better than the Rays. They're literally the Rays with a lot of money. They're as smart as the Rays with a lot of money. And so what we're seeing is the Rays, the Braves, the Padres, the Yankees, the Astros, none of them are as good as the Dodgers. But in baseball, in a seven-game series, there's a chance that one of those teams can defeat a team like the Dodgers. And so what we are seeing is the Dodgers dominating the sport and the Dodgers in this position where, oh, we are going to be the world champions. And we are overwhelming if we can not succumb to the randomness of baseball like what happened to them in 2019, in 2018, in 2017, in 2016, in 2015, 2014, 2013 they probably should have lost, but 2018 too. Like, the randomness of the sport gets you sometimes. And for the Dodgers, it's gotten them an extraordinary amount of the time. Considering they've won 8 division titles and no World Series is really remarkable. And so here are the Dodgers. They are going to be the champions very soon. And what's fascinating about all of that is they did it while being tested. And when they've been tested before, we are used to watching them fold. We're used to the 3-1 lead going against the Dodgers. But this team was just so overwhelming that they could win all these games. And again, this is going to be really funny if they lose on Tuesday and lose on Wednesday and the Rays end up holding the trophy. If that does happen, you probably won't be hearing it in the podcast version on Saturday. And so everything that we have seen take a step forward, the Dodgers finally took that final step forward. And by taking a step forward, a lot of that has to do with just trading for Mookie Betts this offseason, having Mookie Betts be maybe the National League MVP. So they took that step forward. They spent the money. They got the retooling, even though they kept making the playoffs. And boom, Los Angeles Dodgers, World Series champions. It's about to happen. They are overwhelming against the Rays. I'm hoping for a Game 7. But the Rays should have lost the World Series yesterday. They're now on borrowed time. Maybe they'll make the most of that borrowed time. I find it difficult to see, but I also found it difficult to think Washington would come back from down 3-2 last year. It's baseball. 2-game sample sizes don't mean anything in that sport. So kudos to the Dodgers. Kudos to the Rays. Enjoy these last 2 games as they become really, really, really fantastic finish to a baseball season. Maybe the game is going to be intriguing tomorrow, but we're going to have that legendary Game 4 locked in our memory because of how that really ended, but also how we got there with a ball deflecting off of a guy's glove and going into the outfield. Just so weird to have that. And then obviously the bobble by Taylor, Rosarena falls down, Will Smith misses the ball. Chaos ensues, but the Rays win the championship, and Brett Phillips needs an IV to calm down his heart rate because what we just witnessed was just pure cocaine in the form of baseball, which we don't get that very often. We don't get those kinds of moments in baseball super often. I got 2 things left. Do I want to do the split season for baseball or the 1-6 records in football? Just real quick, the split season in baseball, I'll give you the SparkNotes version of it. So basically, split season idea is 2 81-game seasons. At the 81-game mark, all the division winners clinch a playoff spot, and the next round of 81, it's basically like everything starts again from zero, but you also carry over the first 81 games for seeding. So the best overall records get the highest seeds. After 81 games, teams can make the playoffs. They reset the clock to 0-0 on the winning percentage, and then you play 81 games again. Next best record or the team that wins the division again makes the playoffs. For the teams who clinch the division the first time around, it is all for seeding in the next round. It's basically the same thing, except you just have 2 separate standings, the full season standing and each 81-game standing. And it just creates more intrigue because you get two last days of the season. You get two pennant chases throughout the season. They should do that permanently. It would make it more fun. 10 minutes left here on the show, so let's talk about 1-6 football teams. Because as I mentioned that the Chiefs have rendered the entire regular season irrelevant, it is fascinating to watch that combined with all of the teams who are not having any kind of playoff aspirations this year. And it's been a wacky season for that because, damn, not all 1-6 teams are built equally, because we got four 1-6 teams that tell four very different stories as we get to this point in the season. So let's talk about them 1-6 teams. The first one's got to be the Houston Texans, because the Houston Texans did not expect to be at this point in the season where they are. They have one of the elite talents in the sport in Deshaun Watson. He shows it time and time again. They should have beat the Titans last week to get to 2-5, which 2-5 doesn't look as bad as 1-6 considering who the Texans have played this year when we talk about games versus the Chiefs and versus the Steelers and versus the Ravens. And then they lost to Minnesota, which looked pretty bad. But they also lost a game to the Titans that they probably should have won. And then, of course, they played the Packers. So they've got the hardest schedule in the NFL, and they got to 1-6. They fired their coach. They have an elite quarterback. And they're going to need either a defensive guy or an offensive guy, whatever interesting situation they want to go to this offseason. I'm for it. I'm interested to see how the Texans go. They also don't have a draft pick this year. Their first-round pick goes to the Dolphins, so they're not playing for any positioning. They have all the incentive in the world to win these games the rest of the way. I expect they'll win some of them. They'll get to 6 or 7 wins probably, maybe 5 because they've had a couple of bad breaks this year. Maybe they'll only win 5 games. But they've also got 2 games left in the season versus our next team, the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jaguars, led by Gardner Minshew, are now 1-6. Remember when they beat the Colts and everyone was saying, like, this Jaguars team is different, and then they almost beat the Titans? Well, now realities have set in for the Jaguars that they are tanking. They are trying to get Trevor Lawrence. The Jets are not making that easy on them, but at the very least, they are right now the number 2 pick, so they are in line for Justin Fields. And for the Jaguars, they're going to have the same intrigue as a Tua Tagovailoa with the Dolphins, is that they're going to have this mysterious prospect, whether it's Trey Lance or whether it's Justin Fields, and the Jets are probably going to have Trevor Lawrence, and that's going to stir up a whole lot of intrigue. The same way Joe Burrow stirred up a lot of intrigue this year, or the way Kyler Murray stirred up a lot of intrigue for the Cardinals. The Jaguars are going to have Justin Fields, maybe, probably, and it's going to be so fascinating to watch them actually have a talented quarterback. I was doing the numbers on this before. The Jaguars, since 2016, with Blake Bortles, Cody Kessler, Nick Foles, and Gardner Minshew, they are 32nd in passing completion percentage. They are 31st in touchdown to interception ratio as a team, and they are 32nd in QBR since 2016 at the quarterback position. And that includes the season they made the AFC Championship game. It's just been that tough a ride at quarterback. I'm fascinated to see how that franchise gets a legitimate quarterback talent for the first time, arguably, in the entire franchise's history. No disrespect to Gardner Minshew. It's just that we know what he is. We knew what he was last year. And we knew when he was the Jaguars quarterback, they were tanking. No question about it. They were tanking. The next team is the New York Football Giants, and I think they were hoping for better than this, but it couldn't have been a total surprise to them that here they are at 1-6. Like the Jaguars, those were the two really bad franchises, like we knew at the start of the year, but for the Giants, they didn't think it would go the way it's gone this year, where they're 31st in offense in the league, and they're only 31st because the Jets got 4 yards of offense in the second half against the Bills. Like, the only reason the Giants are 31st is because the Jets are historically bad. And Daniel Jones is a fine quarterback. He'll be the Giants quarterback next year. Why? Because they don't want him to fail. And they're going to get a new coach who is not going to have enough of a draft pick to draft his own quarterback, at least not this year. Give it another year and that might change, but I don't think that – I think the Giants are going to win enough games to not get Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. The Jets are going to win maybe one game this year, and the Jaguars are going to win two or three. I think the Giants will probably win like four games and get the number four pick in the draft again. And they're going to go back with Daniel Jones next year. Unless they can get Trevor Lawrence or Justin, then they'll have them. But the Giants are going at it with a new quarterback. Are not going at it likely with a new quarterback next year, just a new front office and maybe a new coach, which might actually be the guy who's already the offensive coordinator in Jason Garrett. Just make him the head coach and then build out the rest of that roster with whatever the new GM is going to look like. But they're headed for a full rebuild. The Jaguars are already in a full rebuild, and I don't think the Giants expected all of that to go the way that it's gone. And the last team at 1-6, the Atlanta Falcons. Boy, that game would have only been more Lions-Falcons if the Falcons – I'm sorry, if the Lions had kicked the game-winning field goal or the game-winning extra point and missed it and forced overtime and the game ends in a tie. That's the only way that game is more Lions-Falcons. And it's silly. It's funny to laugh at the Falcons, but they've got a game plan now. The Falcons are going to tank. The Falcons are going to start a rebuild. They've already fired their entire front office. Their head coach is gone. Most of that coaching staff probably won't remain, even though I think Dirk Cutter is a great offensive coordinator. I can understand getting rid of him and just restarting everything. But, man, you've got to be in a great, great position to have someone like Matt Ryan, but also getting ready to replace Matt Ryan. Again, unlike the Jets and the Jaguars, I don't think the Falcons will get a high enough draft pick to get one of those two guys. And if that's the case, I think they're probably content to roll out with Matt Ryan next year, unless they're not going to get a draft pick higher than this to get the quarterback, which I could understand that if they're not going to do that, they have to draft defense. Like, no question about it. The reason Dan Quinn and Dimitroff were fired was because that defense has been an atrocity for 3 or 4 years now. And every single game the Falcons play, it is always 400 yards for Matt Ryan, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick. They score in the 30s, and it's a 50-50 shot whether they win or not. Now that defense is just atrocious, and they've blown 3 games that are physically impossible to blow leads. Like, 16-point lead to the Cowboys, 16-point lead to the Bears. Had to kneel down. All you had to do was kneel down, and you were going to beat the Lions. And no, you score a touchdown, and Matt Stafford goes a minute left and wins the game. Like, the Falcons should be 4-3 at this point, and it's just hilarious that they're 1-6. It's sad, but it's funny this time because I didn't pick the Falcons. And if I can't enjoy the Falcons being this crap, then I might as well just not be watching the games at all. Because if you can't laugh at that, then what's the point of being here? If you can't laugh at that Falcons team that is now 1-6 in the most bizarre 1-16 the NFL has ever seen. It's just utterly unbelievable. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping into another episode of Take It Easy's radio show. Thank you to Martez. He's there behind the scenes helping everything go smoothly so that you can hear this wonderful, wonderful content that is being put out here. We got Talking Sports from Detroit coming up next. Again, if you're listening on the Take It Easy Podcast Network, download, rate, review, subscribe, but also check us out on Open Talk Radio. The link to Open Talk Radio is available in our bio for this episode, so check that out, as well as all of the great stuff from both Take It Easy and Open Talk Radio. Again, it is Monday. It is 4 o'clock. This has been the Take It Easy Radio Show. Thank you, everybody. Laugh a little bit, cry a little bit, smile a little bit, and we'll talk to you again next week.